welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. And we're recording right here at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive. This is show number 64.
Good Lord.
It is.
January 12th, 2004. And we're going to be talking about building, repairing, and maintaining for the next hour, all designed with the blind in mind, of course. Here are the hosts for the show, ladies and gentlemen, Don Shaw.
Well, Mr. Houston, show 64 in 2004. Man, what a deal.
Hey, all right. Don Patterson, hi there.
Oh, I'm lucky to be here after those doctors this morning. I'm kind of glad. I'd rather be here than there.
We probably don't want to tell that.
We don't want to.
And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, the creator and producer of the show. Here he is, none other than the one and only my hero, Phil Parr.
Stop it now. Just sitting here joining the liver spots on the back of my hand. It looks like a relief map of Kentucky. But hello there. Welcome to the exciting Blind Handyman. Pat, you went to the doctor this morning, did you?
Yeah.
Had a little procedure
got
done.
Got the oil changed.
Got the oil changed.
61,000 miles.
Well, they cut that polyp up while they were up in there.
They
didn't
did that.
Amazing.
Boy.
Don't go, folks.
Non-technical term for that procedure, a GI, I think, is that it?
I don't know. I had one long years ago, but I went to sleep. They did me mine.
I kind of wish I had them, but somehow
it seems like it'd be
it just
insane.
It just didn't work out.
You were seeing yourself on the screen?
I saw it on the screen. I could kind of hear them talking, but I didn't feel anything. I mean, little discomfort, but not. It was just, you know, but now they have the virtual
colonoscopy.
And, of course, our guys, you know, Lufkin is light years behind the rest of the world. So they said they thought they had heard about them, but they weren't sure. Nobody was doing them. They were sure of that. Nobody was doing them in town.
That's where you take the pill and the camera has it.
Yeah, I think there's no intrusion. I mean, it's just, you know, and they're accurate.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how it works, but next time.
Pretty soon they'll have virtual sex, won't they, huh?
I think they already do that.
They don't in Lufkin.
Probably not in Lufkin.
Some of the bigger towns they probably do.
Probably out in Hudson.
Over at Pollock they probably have. Anyway, we are the Blind Handyman crew, and we're in good form today. It's a kind of a cloudy day in Lufkin, Texas, like anybody cares. A few folks in Kuala Lumpur, I'm sure, don't care what our weather is here.
But
in Lufkin,
it's warm, by
it is
gosh.
Fairly warm. It's about 55. I'd say.
Did you see the little listing that was going on the blind like me list? I think last Friday night or so, somebody asking about temperatures around the country. And man, we're lucky to be in a warm place, I guess, at times.
Yeah, those folks in Pennsylvania were suffering, weren't they?
Yeah, it was cold there, wasn't it?
It was. Well, you know, it's amazing how many Pennsylvania people we have on the blind like me list.
Yes.
I bet 25% of the people on there are from Pennsylvania. Why would that be?
Yeah, there is a lot. Yeah. From
I don't know
that area.
There wouldn't be more blind people per capita in Pennsylvania, would there?
Well, you wouldn't think so, but according to the list.
Anyway, speaking of that, on this week's Blind Like Me, we have Linda Justice, who's from somewhere in Pennsylvania,
Philadelphia. I don't know.
We've had her on Blind Like Me. I mean, we had her on the Handyman Show, and she works at Home Depot, and she'll be our guest. Interesting interview. She's had a good life. She's a bright lady. You'll like her. So stay tuned for that. Anyway, Tommy, are you ready?
Yeah, we've got an email here from Bryce, and he's talking about, well, it's not an email. We took it off the list. He's talking about air compressors and tools.
Yeah.
He says, I was an iron worker in my younger days when I had sight, and we used to have a quart of motor oil around, and we'd pour some right into the hose connection, and it wasn't a couple of drops either. We'd pour about a half a cup down into the connection, connect the hose back on, hold the pneumatic ratchet gun or reamer out away from your body and turn it on, and the oil would spray out in a circular motion. Now, this oil just didn't serve the purpose of lubricating the gun. It also prevented the gun from freezing up, and I do mean freezing up, as frost would build up and turn into ice. Of course, these pneumatic tools you'd use around the house won't have this problem, as they won't get the air pressure or the use of the pneumatic guns used out in the field. Everyone have a wonderful weekend.
You know, Robert Todd was telling me about in the wintertime. Of course, they use this. That's the guy that built these two buildings. We've talked about that before. Anyway, he said in the wintertime those hoses will freeze, and you get. Of course, the water builds up in the bottom of your air compressor. You're supposed to drain it every once in a while. But he said they would definitely freeze. But they tell you every time you use your nail gun to take some. I've got an oil thing in there. It's pneumatic oil that you just put down in the place where you connect your hose.
Oh.
And it's supposed to lubricate the tool and keep it functional. So
well, that makes sense, though.
But it bars it. It's just a little squeeze thing. So I guess they would pour a cup of motor oil in there.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something, man, when you pull that trigger, man?
All squirting out everywhere.
You'd definitely want to be on the outside project, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I wonder what he wrote that in reference to on the list.
Not sure.
Someone had written in talking about that you ought to, it may have been Dale, I'm not sure, said that you should put just a drop or two of oil in your pneumatic tools just to keep them lubricated. Right. It's kind of how that...
He's right. That's what it said. It said that when I bought this compressor to be sure. So every time I use a nail gun, I put a little bit down in there. Usually end up getting it all over everything. But anyway.
Yeah, oil is a messy thing, isn't it?
It can be. Go ahead, Tommy.
Okay, that's from Vicki Black. She says her husband is doing almost too well as far as a supply of chair goes. Now, this is chair caning she's talking about.
Okay.
Thanks for all your earlier help. I get to help with the fun stuff, cutting out cane. He's doing a hand weave that has no knots in it anywhere. His weaving style for split, rush, and hand weave all use knots. This chair was round with 66 holes and not one knot. Here's the question. Can anybody explain how to do a hand weave verbally that doesn't require knots? It looks so clean and neat that way. Thanks in advance.
Well, I'm not the caning expert. We have a couple here. Afternoon chairman here, and you, Don Shaw.
Well, I've got a comment on that, just a short comment, but the longer version of this, someone posted a good explanation for this on the list here probably a week or two ago. It'll be in the archives talking about exactly how to do this. But it's basically you make loops in your cane when you come down one hole, come back up in the next or the next hole after that to come back up to the top of your chair. You do a series of twists before you pull the piece of cane up tight. And when you pull it up tight, it will, in other words, lock in the last piece of cane. But for a better explanation of that, again, go back and read the archive on the list because it'll tell you exactly how to do it.
Now, this is to keep from splicing cane together with knots.
That's right. No knots.
Well, you always splice those under the chair so nobody sees them anyway. What's the difference?
Just some chairs are just strange as far as... most chairs I've seen, or a lot of them anyway, that you tie the knots in have a groove in the bottom of the chair, and then a lot of times the knots will end up in the groove of the chair. And I've caned a lot of chairs too that the knots were just underneath the chair.
Yeah. I was thinking I ran across somebody who was reading someplace about that you could cut those ends and glue them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can put, like, with all these super sophisticated glues we have now, like crazy glue, you just cut your ends short. Glue it back in that slot instead of pulling a knot up in there. Just take a awl and punch it. And actually, it would be gluing it to the cane, not to the chair.
Gluing it back to the last cane.
Yeah.
You could put a peg in the hole. A lot of different ways to do chairs, but I don't know.
If you put a peg in the hole, then you can't go back down through that hole. If you run your fives or whatever else you're going to run next.
That would be the problem.
It'd be the problem.
Yeah, you'd have to have a way to hold it in between times.
The problem with us is we all knew a little bit about chair caning.
Yeah,
just
that's
enough
the
to screw up and chair.
We all know. Boy, I'm glad I don't have to do that anymore. I could do it, but it was tough. We got into this last week.
We did. It's a tough road, man. A tough way to make some money.
Caning chairs, but I guess a man's got to do what a man's got to do, right?
I guarantee
he had probably been doing this for a living. He probably just doing it as a sideline.
Probably, you would think, probably as some extra money sideline job.
But you see caned chairs all the time, so somebody canes them.
I do believe that in a major metropolitan area, Don kind of at one time toyed with it here. I just don't know if you'd have enough. But I believe if you were good at what you did and maybe you made some contact with upholsterers.
In a big city.
In a big city. I think you could probably have more work than you.
Oh, I do too.
I bet
there's no doubt about that.
Well, and the type of job it is, you could read talking book while you're doing it. I mean,
I'm sure you can.
I mean, it would be a mindless thing. It wouldn't be any worse than working in the factory and doing it, putting on, you know, putting lug nuts on or something, all, you know.
Oh, yeah. You could read and...
Sure, you could do all kind of things.
Okay, well, I've got another one here. Right. It's this from Kathy Sevens Williams.
I remember her.
And she says, before I reinvent the wheel, can anyone tell me their solution for the following problem? We just got a set of surround sound speakers for our TV and DVD player.
Mm-hmm.
They work just fine, but they pick up our local AM radio station.
Yeah, okay.
And it's loud enough to hear in the background of every channel. Most annoying. So what do we shield with?
I would doubt that it's coming in through the speakers. It's probably coming in through the cord between the television and the amplifier. Or I would speaker wire would be would I wouldn't think that would pick it up. You're close to someone's AM transmitter. And they got a lot of RF there in your area. I would make sure the amplifier is grounded well. And I don't know, is it with the sound, surround sound comes from her television? She may not have a separate amplifier.
Yes, from her television. She's on her cable. I know that. They've been talking about this some on the list.
Yeah.
It's, they've been talking about grounding things and grounding the whole house. And I mean, just a lot of different things. I still don't think the problem has worked out even as we speak.
I wonder if her television probably isn't a grounded plug. I might take the chassis of the TV. This would be a dangerous thing. I'd probably do it, though. Take, you know, the third leg on a plug, that little round thing, is a ground. I might tie a wire to the chassis of the TV and then plug it into that third lug on your TV, on the plug, if it's not a grounded plug. And that may knock it out. But I'm surprised you don't get that in cordless phones and other things. But if the amplifier is separate from the TV, the surround sound amp is separate from the TV, believe me, the problem is between the TV and the amplifier. Because... that's a would be a line-in connection on that amplifier, which would be strong enough to pick up that RF. I would doubt if it is if it's the speaker wire coil. I didn't see this on. What list is this on? Am I on that list?
I hope so.
This is on the handyman list.
It was, yeah.
It certainly was.
Good bit.
Well,
of
I didn't see
that.
But anyway, try that and let us know, Kathy.
Okay, here's Dixie says, I'm not afraid to paint and have a good to moderate track record. Primer is my best, but the drop cloth presents a problem. How to keep from stepping in drops and tracking them.
We can't help you, Dixie. Does anyone go and screens these or anything?
Next.
I don't know, Dixie. You know, I stepped in the dope tray the other night. But I don't know any way you'd do that.
Well, the biggest problem, would be to me for a blind person is not so much stepping in the spots, but stepping in it and not knowing it. So you might consider painting without your shoes on.
That's what I'd do.
At least you'd know you'd stepped in something and have something of water or something to
wash your foot off
to
with.
Do it right then.
Really?
Yeah, I'd paint with it without shoes. I think a lot of blind girls, or I shouldn't say blind girls, that's a sexist remark. Blind people who are cleaning houses sweep the floor with barefooted so they can feel where the dirt is.
Because I'm partially sighted, and I had the same problem. I mean, a drop cloth, and you think the drop cloth, oh, boy, this is going to save me. And then you realize you're dropping stuff on the drop cloth, and it doesn't
and
absorb into the plastic.
That, yeah.
It just lays there, and so then you come along, and you're on your new carpet.
Yeah. Is she a total? Is Dixie a total? I mean, Kathy, is this?
I'm not sure.
Which one is this?
Her name's Dixie.
This is Dixie. Well, is she? I wonder if she's a total.
I don't know. She didn't say.
I guess she'll let us know. But if you're totally blind, you're going to step in stuff. It's just a good thing, you know, you don't have cows.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Because, you know, it's going to happen. If you're blind, you're going to. But I'd paint barefooted if I did it.
Okay, hi all. I know there's a wealth of grease removing stuff out there for cleaning hands and getting grease or oil off of tools and parts. However, I stumbled across a cheap but very effective compound, kitchen sink cleaner. Now, the Comic brand cleaner I have, which according to the label has bleach, literally melts off grease from both hands and especially from metal surfaces, such as oil parts or tools. My wife said it's pretty inexpensive, and she's used to the expensive stuff for removing grease. Okay. I do not know if sink cleaner without the bleach works as well or whether all cleanser has bleach in it, but Comet just decided to put it on the front to fool us. With this, very little scrubbing is necessary. I get good results from just hand rubbing. As for routine cleaning, yes, it is a little rougher on your hands than the creamy hand cleaning compound, but
yeah,
a lot cheaper.
I'd say so.
And it is a good backup when you're out of everything else. For the tool and part cleaning, though, I think it's very good and quick. So there is your garage cleaning hint for the new year.
And who is that?
And
from?
That's Tim Ford sent us that.
Yeah. Well, you know, do they not make lava soap anymore?
You know, I don't know.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. I've got a bar at the house.
Yeah.
Because, brother, it'll take, you know, I mean, it'll remove everything, the skin, everything off your hands.
Yeah,
the
old lava soap had kind of a texture like Comet. You know, it was kind of a grainy type
sandpaper
texture.
Kind of a
sandpaper.
Texture.
Yeah.
Well, buddy, it would do it.
But
know?
It would do it. But that's a good idea if you were out of everything and could use a little Comet. Wouldn't be.
How about,
you know,
bar
for a quick
salt
cleanup?
Well, yeah, that's a solvent.
Like, they don't make that anymore, do they? Bar salt?
Yeah, it's just I think you might can buy it at the parts store, like by the gallon. It's a kerosene or diesel? Sort
it was of the stuff to soak your tools
just
in.
To soak your tools in.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a solvent of.
Yeah, I don't know much about it, but I lava soap. I just wanted to
think. Lava soap.
Well, I guess I missed it. Was he talking about cleaning his hands?
Both.
Cleaning
for hands and tools.
Yeah.
Oh, tools.
Yeah,
okay,
for both.
I thought I didn't hear about the sink. Yeah, the tools would.
He said if you're out of hand degreaser or cleaner stuff, you know, it's just a cheap. It's a cheap alternative. It's something you
or
could use.
Or vice versa too. You know, a lot of people get with WD-40 get it, you're thinking lubricant more, but I'll tell you, it's a solvent too. And if you
sure
have a dirty wrenches, just spray them with WD-40 and then wipe them off.
It's a cleaner as much as anything, I think.
Yeah.
You don't want to put it on anything that you don't want oily, like, I mean, it does have a residue, but it's an excellent cleaner.
It sure is. It'll clean.
Okay. Hi. A few blind handyman shows ago, Tom Houston read an article that describes the tankless hot water heaters.
Yeah.
It went into some detail. Though I must say, the host of the show should have their beer kept away from them for a month or so. Grin. They didn't pay close attention to Tom's reading. And if I were him, I wouldn't get them any drinks for a while. And this is from a guy named Phil, somebody.
Phil.
What did you think we did wrong? What did we do wrong? What did I do wrong?
I don't know. I just thought.
I don't either.
I thought it was a funny little article to read here.
Yeah, that was good.
I want him to know one thing. I'll give up tankless water heaters before I give up brewskis.
You got that right.
But that was pretty easy, but that's an expensive way to go. And we were trying to get Pat to do that in his house, but he'd already voted no. So
anyway, tankless hot water.
Our guest today is Jerry Barrier, right?
Jerry Barrier.
I keep thinking I know this guy from somewhere. That maybe I'm not sure if he wasn't on the. If he isn't part of that thing that the printing house has. But anyway, we'll talk to him in just a minute with more of the exciting Blind Handyman Show. This is Phil Parr. I probably didn't have to tell you that, but I did anyway. We just wanted to mention that my wife, Lou Ann, and I are supporting Wesley Clark as the nominee for the Democratic Party and eventually to go on and win the presidency in November. We certainly hope so. If you have not committed to a candidate, we'd like to ask you for your support for Wesley Clark. And if you're in doubt and you would like some information about Wes Clark, we'd be glad to send you some. Of course, with no obligation. There'd be no follow-up. We just want you to read about Wes Clark. And if you like him, we'd appreciate your support. You can contact us, of course, at my email address, which is simply philparr, P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R, at txucom.net. We'll send this as a Word document so you can open it with your screen reader. Philparr at txucom.net. We'll send you some information about Wesley Clark. Thanks for listening, and we'd appreciate your support, and so would General Wesley Clark, the next president of the United States.
Blind Handyman, all lowercase, one word at hotmail.com. The blindlikeme.com.
Contact information.
Blind Like Me. Blind Like Me. Lowercase, all one word, at txucom.net. That's Blind Like Me at txucom.net.
Contact information.
Blind Handyman Listserv. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com.
Contact information.
Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind Like Me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your
contact information.
You are listening to The Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Well, I keep thinking, pardon me, that I know this guy from somewhere, but, you know, it's just possible, Mr. Parr, that you know someone else that has the same name. Imagine that.
What a deal.
What a deal. It's just possible. Jerry Barry, how are you, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
Well, good. Welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. And you're where are you in the country?
I am in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, which is in the center of the state near the town of Worcester.
Shrewsbury?
Yes.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shrewsbury. Well, Massachusetts is not very big, so you couldn't be too far from Boston, could you?
That's true. I'm about 35 miles west of Boston, not east of Boston.
Well, no, but you were west of Boston, you'd be out in the ocean or on, I don't know how far Cape Cod goes out there, but it isn't 35 miles, is it?
Right.
What do you do for a living? Do you work still or no?
Well, I actually just took an early retirement recently, about 7 weeks ago. I worked for 24 years for Verizon Communications, and I worked in human resources, and in the last 5 years, I worked at the Verizon Center for Customers with Disabilities, where we distributed adaptive telephone equipment to people with disabilities, things like TTYs and amplified telephones and that sort of thing.
Have you done, did you do some radio years ago?
Only at a reading service in Greensburg, Pennsylvania for a couple of years. I had a talk show on there and actually even operated the board using very high-tech means back in the 70s. I would turn the volume up and speak into the mic until I could hear the little pin tapping against the hear the needle tapping against the peg, and then I'd back it off a little bit, and I knew I had it set right.
You know, they're laughing, but that's how when back in the old days when I made carts. When we're dumping something from, I didn't worry about the tape level because I could hear the feedback from the tape. You know, you could hear that echo coming back to you, and you knew about where to set that. But when I went to put it on card, I turned everything down and listened and ease it up till I heard that.
Yep.
I heard it bumping. Then I back off a little bit and I made the cart just the right level. That sounds stupid, but what other way did you have of doing it?
That's right.
That was
what
it.
A deal.
They didn't have any noise, any beepers, things that made clicking noises.
Sounds and things.
And so you did this talk show on this public radio station. What did you talk about? Whatever you wanted to or what?
Yes, I would. It was a reading service for the blind, so I would read magazine articles and bring those to people's attention. And you know, I'd read things out of the Matilda Ziegler or whatever other magazine I could get my hands on, the Braille Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd talk about current topics of interest locally or just anything I could come up with. And I can't remember anymore what the name of the show was, but it was just kind of a generic talk show. We were lucky if we ever got more than one or maybe two calls each day. I think I ran it once a week.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it.
So, but you read these articles in Braille.
Right.
So obviously you're a fast, good Braille reader.
Yeah.
Right? All right. Well, so you distributed technology or phone things to disabled people, like amplified phones. Do they? I guess they don't give those away, do they?
Well, actually, in most instances, they were given away. There was an income scale that we looked at, and if you were above a certain point, there was a copay, but only 0.5% of our customers would be above that copay amount. So for the most part, it was free of charge. And it's a program for life. So once you get equipment, if that equipment breaks, if it's under warranty, we would repair it. And if it's out of warranty and it breaks, typically we would just replace it. And there would never be any charge unless the person did something negligent like spilling Pepsi Cola in the phone or something like that.
And or in our case, Jack Daniels.
Right, but, that too.
Yeah.
I can tell you from experience that we had some much worse things than that spilled in equipment, but we won't go into that.
Well, now, for deaf people now, they have a system, I understand, that will actually print, like I could talk to a deaf person and it would appear on a screen as text to them.
Well, there is something now called video relay that requires human intervention. So that a relay operator will visually reproduce what you've said in sign language.
Uh-huh.
There's not really anything that I'm aware of that's completely automated that will take your speech and convert it into usable typed text.
Yeah.
Nothing that's fast enough and accurate enough to be used widely.
I guess there might be some, like if you had a deaf child and you talked to that child all the time, then the voice recognition software could get used to you and probably do it.
That's correct.
Because that's getting, I mean, there are a lot of those programs, and they're not real expensive anymore.
Right. My job there was to be the point of contact between Verizon, who oversaw and managed the program, and a group of 16 agents that we used to distribute it. We hired disability organizations and independent living centers and places like that to actually distribute and maintain the equipment for us. So my job was to handle their day-to-day needs. And I did all the database work for them. I did their billing every month and was very involved in error correction and things like that. So I used the computer constantly.
Yeah, so you just decided it was time to retire, or did they retire you, or what?
Well, they had a major downsizing initiative. And as a matter of fact, I can tell you this because it was on national news. 21,600 people actually left the company.
Whoa.
All on the same day, on November 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been around long enough that I was eligible to retire. So I took it and certainly hope to find other employment eventually, but I'm enjoying myself in the meantime.
Well, you will for a while, but you can't go on not doing anything.
No.
I found that out.
Right.
That's why I'm here.
Bored, sooner or later.
You know, that's
right.
Why I'm sitting here doing what I'm doing, because you can't. You think you can. You think, well, I'll just read and, you know, do nothing. But you can't. You can, if you've got talent you want to use, it's impossible to do.
Right.
And I wouldn't think a guy like you probably, you probably won't have any trouble finding something to keep yourself busy. What, let's see, Don said you wanted to talk about, wood splitting.
Yes, okay. Well, let me just tell you a little bit about my experience. we moved here to Massachusetts almost 6 years ago now, and for the first time I lived in a place that had a fireplace. And I wasn't even much interested in a fireplace until I had one, and then I got fascinated by it. And I wanted to learn how to build a fire that would keep burning. I still haven't learned that yet. That's another story.
That's the catch.
I've gotten better at it.
Yeah.
But I got interested in how the wood was prepared for burning and all that. And I decided one day that I would like to be able to split my own wood. And I tried the traditional sledgehammer and wedge. But as a person who's totally blind, I had some difficulty with that. I know there are people who have found kind of compromised ways of using that method, but it didn't work very well for me. I didn't hit my hand with a sledgehammer, but I wasn't hitting the wedge very often either. So I went to a couple of stores, several in fact, and asked them, is there any kind of a log splitter that a blind person could use? And without exception, as they were backing away from me,
they said no.
No.
Yeah.
And I wasn't satisfied with that, so I went to the greatest resource I know, which is the Internet, and I just started doing searches for log splitter and splitting wood and things like that, and I found that there are a number of kinds of devices at varying prices and levels of complexity that a person can use that seem to work well. I wanted something simple that if I had a log maybe that was split, but I needed to split it a second time to make it smaller, or if for some reason someday we cut a tree down in our yard, that I'd be able to split logs as I need them. So I didn't want to spend a lot of money on a hydraulic one or a gasoline powered one, and they do have both. They actually have ones that run from the energy created by a standard floor jack that you would use to jack up your car.
Uh-huh.
It creates the force to split the logs. And that certainly sounds like a safe kind to use, but I didn't want to spend the money on that. And I found this website called logsplitter.com, and it still exists. So I just went on it the other day to make sure it was still there.
Uh-huh.
And on there, almost as soon as I got on the website, I started reading about this thing that sounded too good to be true and sounded so simple that I just was disappointed that I hadn't thought of the concept myself. So I ordered one. It was $69, which was a little pricey, but I wanted it, and I ordered it.
For a wood splitter, that's cheap, Jerry. You know that.
Pardon me?
For a wood splitter, that's cheap.
Yes, it is. So what this device is, it's very simply about a 4.5 foot long pipe with a wedge welded to the bottom of it.
All right.
The wedge is the thing that you stick in the end of the log to split it, for anybody who's not familiar with that. It's a steel sharpened wedge-shaped thing that is what splits the log. So this is a pipe with a wedge welded to the end of it. Fitted over top of this pipe is a pipe of larger diameter that can slide up and down on it. This
yeah.
larger pipe is weighted at the top so that yeah. If you hold it up as high as it will go, when you raise the larger pipe up to its full height, so it's about maybe 6.5 feet high, if you drop it down, it slams down with a pretty good amount of force, almost the same as it would be if you were hitting it with a sledgehammer.
Uh-huh.
And the value of this is there's no aiming because it just goes straight up and down. You stand the log on end so that it's vertical. You stick this wedge in the top end of the log, maybe tap it a couple of times to get a little bit of a set there, and then you just start raising up this pipe, and it's got a stop on it so it won't pull all the way off the smaller pipe.
And let it drop.
You just keep letting it drop, and usually about 3 or 4 times is enough. And if you want to add a little force to it, you can kind of give it a push as it's dropping, which gives it some added force. And a few of those will split that log right down the middle just as clean as anything.
Now, how do you start the wedge into the log? Do you have to hit the top of this device?
Actually, no. If you hold it up on the top of the log and just raise the outer pipe up maybe a couple of inches and just drop it down a few times, that kind of knocks it in place.
Uh-huh.
That creates enough of a groove there that it won't move around when you start to really hit it in earnest.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, what is the thing that the printing house called Fredhead?
Yep.
That they have that, I may have seen an article. Did you write them a little piece about this?
I don't remember. It seems to me that I did, actually, and I know there are some other articles in there about splitting wood.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen, this principle comes, have you ever seen a T-post used to put up barbed wire fence?
No.
That's exactly how they drill. Instead of taking a sledgehammer and banging, you know, a T-post is probably, an inch. It's a metal post that has places
yeah.
to tie barbed wire, and on it has two flanges
uh-huh.
sticking out, like if you were facing it, say, left to right.
Well, it's like a small piece of angle.
And you buy a big, heavy, about a 3-foot piece of pipe with handles on it that goes over the T-post,
yep.
and you bring it down and hits these flanges and drives it in, and it is much easier than a sledgehammer.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's probably, it sounds like the same. It's really kind of creating its own little, you know, gravity involved and just being in, you know, the right proportion to the mass, as they say.
Yeah, and there are a lot of advantages to this kind of a splitter. One is that you can do it inside the garage because there's no aiming. It doesn't take up much space at all. The thing is just it's a vertical pipe. That's all it is. So, you know, you can stand it in the corner and then just pull it out when you need it, and as long as your ceiling is at least 6.5 feet high, which it certainly should be,
well, yeah,
there's no problem using it indoors, and doesn't make a whole lot of noise. You know, there's no chance of really hurting yourself with it, as far as I can tell.
Well, that sounds good, but of course, now you know that, and you may have seen them. You can operate a gasoline-operated wood splitter.
I have heard that. Yes.
Well, we have guys here
we've had experience with that.
I was wondering too, in your searches on the internet, did you not encounter? Because I saw this on one of the infomercials, the electric log splitter that you could use in the basement. It was quiet. and it didn't have, you know, no gasoline, so no fumes. And it was, I don't remember the price, but it was not, you know, it was maybe a couple of hundred bucks. But I just wonder if you encountered that.
No, I was aware that there were electric ones, but I had never read a description of how they worked. The one that really fascinated me and intrigued me was the hydraulic one.
Yeah.
That's the one, if I were going to go to the next level up, that would be what I would get.
Well, you got two guys here, sitting right here, that used one, I think. Mr. Shaw and Mr. Parr did quite well at it.
We've told this story before, but we rented, we had about three trees down. We live in the woods, and we had probably three. They say that if you live in a wooded area, you're going to lose 15% of your timber. I don't remember how many, but anyway, we built this building where we are now, the studio and wood shop, and had cut down several oak trees and gotten all the pine out of the way. We had three or four oak trees that we wanted to split, way more than we could have cut up with a chainsaw and split, so we rented a wood splitter.
Yeah.
And I've told this story before. My brother-in-law bought it by at noon. Shaw was over here, and he set it down, and he fired it up, and he looked at it, and he said, "Well, let me go back to work, but I'll try to get off a little early, and I'll show you boys how to use this."
That's right.
Oh, yeah, I heard this story.
He wasn't out of the driveway before, but this was an interesting deal, because you could stand it vertically or horizontally, but you just laid the log on there and started it,
get the hell out of the way.
And moved out of the way, because it was going to split the log. It was great.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it. You know, you wouldn't start it with your hand in there. You know, move your hand, Arthur.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was a deal, man.
But it was a deal, man. It was noisy, but I'm sure
it was
a thing
noisy. Like,
I bet it would be a $500 piece of gear, don't you imagine?
That's what would be neat about your wood splitter. You were talking about Jerry R., the electric one, either one for that matter. I guess the loudest thing you'd hear would be the noise of the wood splitting, huh?
That's right.
Which would be great.
Well, you'd hear that pipe knob. And you say these are just $69?
Yeah.
Yep. And it'd be a lot easier on the old back, wouldn't it?
I think so. You know, I don't think you'd want to use this if you were going to split a cord of wood.
Yeah.
But if you just had a few at a time, to be perfectly honest with you, I haven't split that much wood with it because around here I have trouble finding wood that's not already split.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of it you buy.
If you cut down a tree of your own or something, that's one thing. But if you go to try to buy it, you can't really buy it unsplit.
That's no, correct. If you buy a cord of wood, it's going to be split.
It's going to be split, yeah. So.
I did have one situation where we take a walk every Saturday morning with a group of people that I get together with, a church group, and somebody pointed out to me that in this one yard up the street here, the whole yard was full of nice, cleanly cut logs where somebody had cut a tree down. So I went home and wrote a nice print note and had somebody tack it onto one of those logs saying how interested I was in buying some of those logs from them. And that I'd be willing to pay more than the fair market value for them because I really wanted those unsplit logs. And they never responded to me. So,
do you know what kind of wood they were?
I think they were probably oak. We have a lot of oak and maple.
Well, that's fine. That's fine, but you got to be careful and don't burn too much pine in your fireplace.
That's a very good point. That's right. I've read actually quite a number of articles about fireplaces and chimneys, and most of what I read has been on the Internet. And, that's one thing they say, to be careful about not burning too much of that soft wood.
Now, you say you're having a hard time sustaining the fire.
Well, I have had many situations where my fire just didn't continue to burn very well. I don't think there's anything wrong with my fireplace. I always seem to get a good draft. I don't get smoke back in the room or anything like that. But there certainly is a knack to being able to set up the fire initially so that you have plenty of kindling underneath the bigger pieces of wood, and you kind of go from smaller to fairly big to bigger.
Yes.
So that you really get that wood going good. And once you get it to that point, it's not so bad. That was a learning process for me.
Obviously, are you using a grate in there?
Yeah.
Do you have your wood up?
A cradle.
That would be my first concern if you're having trouble keeping it going.
Right. I do use a grate.
Like a cradle thing to lay it in, lay your logs in. Yeah.
What I usually do is I start with some newspaper on the floor of the fireplace.
Yeah.
And then on the grate, I've got some small pieces of kindling wood and then some little bit bigger ones. And then if I happen to have any kind of excess pieces that came from the split wood where they're not really half logs but just some chunks of wood, I'll put those on.
Yeah.
And then I put a couple of logs above it, and usually maybe two logs going across the fireplace and then one going diagonally between the two so that they're they're pretty much touching together, but with some airspace between them.
That's the deal. Is keeping what I just lay a newspaper in the bottom of the cradle, and then lay some smaller pieces on top of that. Maybe put a little bigger one in the back. But we have a thing here in East Texas that I don't know if they. I'm sure they have it everywhere. We have a thing called rich pine, and it is pine that has a lot of rosin in it. And two or three pieces of those, and good buddy, you got fire. I mean, it's ready to roll. I can within. It takes me. I built one the other day, and I built it on Tuesday, and my house cleaning lady was here. It was a bad day to do it. She kept running the vacuum, and I couldn't. But you can take the poker. Once you get it going, you can hear it, and just take it, take the poker, and move. Just move something. Stick it in there and make a little motion. Move the log a little bit, and it will either get louder or not. And eventually, you will figure out when you've got it. You know, because you want to make air holes for the first, hour or so while you're building the fire. You've got to give it plenty of air. After that, you can put about anything on it, and you're ready to go. But
right,
it's a listening process, you know.
Yep, I used the poker, and I also bought a bellows and fooled around with that a little bit.
Yeah.
That was a lot of work, though.
Yeah.
Bellows is okay when you're just first getting it started if you want to build it up a little bit.
Yeah, give it a little air. I just blow on it.
Yeah, I think, it's kind of strange. I'm going to miss going. We're building a new house, and we have a fireplace, but I don't think we're going to burn wood. We're going to put the gas logs. It's kind of the thing now, but in my life.
I remember when you made fun of Don Shaw because he's burning gas logs.
No, he burns those, the wooden ones.
The Sterno logs, grocery store logs.
Two things I've had in my life that it was a wood stove, and when I sold that house, I missed that wood stove just really. I mean, it was good. You could heat, stay warm with it. And I've really, when I first moved in the house I'm in now that I've sold, I had a fireplace and I didn't care much about it, but I've really learned how to use it and how to keep a fire. But each fire, each time you build a fire, it sounds strange, but they all have their own little personalities.
A little different. Yeah.
Sometimes it takes two logs to make it burn. One log won't burn, but if you've got a nice bed of coals, you can just throw one log kind of there. And
yep.
I had a fire there this last cold snap we had, and because you don't close the damper like you can on a wood stove, but I just got up, went to bed, the fire went out. I got up the next morning and kind of stirred around and threw a log on it because I had a good bed of coals.
And away it went.
Away it went.
Whoa.
And that was one thing I liked about the wood stove. You could do that all the time. You could just keep the coals hot.
Yeah, I would like to have a wood stove, but my house is not really conducive to one. It's a split-entry house, and it's a very open house, but... two levels, and we have two fireplaces, and I never have thought that a stove was the right thing to put into one of those fireplaces. I know you can do it.
Yeah.
There are inserts that you can put in there, but it just didn't seem worth the trouble, especially since we have a good hot water gas heating system.
Yeah. Well, it takes about an hour of small pieces. The problem with me is I get in a hurry and I want to put something big on there. Let's get through with it. But you don't. It takes about an hour. You just have to get up about every 10 minutes and stick your poker and then make you an air hole and keep putting small chunks on there. And eventually you'll have it where you can't...
And just so folks will know, going back to this rich pine thing you were talking about, when you said use two or three pieces to get the fire started with, he means like small pieces, not like a split log or something size pieces.
No,
like slivers.
I mean,
it doesn't take a piece very big at all to get.
But if it's really rich,
to get it going.
If it's really rich and you get a little tiny tapered end on it, you can light this rich pine with a match.
Yeah, they sell that here. I think they call it fat wood.
Probably so.
Uh-huh.
It has a very strong, almost a licorice, resinous smell.
Oh, it does.
Man, it's great, though, for lighting a fire. And also, I tell you, talking about the Sterno logs. You can either buy a Sterno log and just kind of cut up your own, or I think you can buy, small pieces of that, and that's a good fire starter now, just to cut some of that up.
Right. I use ones that are shaped like little bricks.
Yeah.
They work quite well.
Those are good, too.
What do you do, add some wood later or just keep using them?
Oh, yeah.
I use those just to get it started.
Just for a start.
Those things don't smell very good, and I like the smell of good wood smoke.
I like to go out. When you're going outside getting wood, you can really smell it. It smells like wintertime,
Yeah.
It just does. Well,
you'd like that rich pine then because it smells great, man.
Yeah.
Buy you some of that fat wood because it doesn't take, I don't know how they sell it, but it doesn't take much of that, and you got to, it'll... a newspaper and a piece of rich pine, and you're gone. If you got some small pieces, that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
well,
good thing to have.
Of course, it gets colder up here than it does down here. We don't have much winter in Texas, you know.
Well, let's see. 2 days ago, it was 5 below 0 when I got up.
Oh, forget
today,
it.
It's up to 30 degrees, and it feels like spring.
Yeah, it'll be a nice day. I guess it does. Well, we're at about probably 55 here, I guess.
Yeah.
We're coming to Boston someday, and I'll look you up when we get up there.
Well, you do that. We'd be glad to have you. Let me just mention one more thing about that log splitter. It even has a pin that goes through it that holds it in the all the way down position so that you can carry it around without the two pieces of pipe trying to come apart.
Slapping around, yeah.
Yeah, it's got a nice little safety feature there. It's got a little key ring, kind of a ring on it with a pin that just goes straight through the two pieces of pipe. And it also comes with a little rubber thing that goes over the wedge so that you don't have the exposed wedge bumping into things.
Now, you bought this at, you said, woodsplitter.com?
Logsplitter.com.
Logsplitter.com.
I got to check that out.
And what are you looking for? What do they call this thing?
Oh, yeah, I never did mention that. It's called a super spear.
Super spear.
what a super spear.
What a deal. Well, sir, I may have to have one. And are you on the list?
Yes, I am.
I'll email the list if I get one. That sounds like a handy tool. Jerry, thank you, sir. We've enjoyed it.
All right. I've enjoyed it, too, and you're very welcome.
All right. We'll be back with more. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but something else. In just a minute, more of the Blind Handyman Show. It's Phil Parr, and probably didn't have to tell you that, but I did anyway. We just wanted to mention that my wife, Lou Ann, and I are supporting Wesley Clark as the nominee for the Democratic Party and eventually to go on and win the presidency in November. We certainly hope so. If you have not committed to a candidate, we'd like to ask you for your support for Wesley Clark. And if you're in doubt and you would like some information about Wes Clark, we'd be glad to send you some, of course, with no obligation. There'll be no follow-up. We just want you to read about Wes Clark, and if you like him, we'd appreciate your support. You can contact us, of course, at my email address, which is simply philparr, P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R, at txucom.net. We'll send this as a Word document so you can open it with your screen reader. Philparr at txucom.net. We'll send you some information about Wesley Clark. Thanks for listening, and we'd appreciate your support, and so would General Wesley Clark, the next president of the United States.
Handyman. Blind Handyman, all lowercase, one word at hotmail.com. That's Blind Handyman at hotmail.com.
Contact information.
Blind like me, lowercase, all one word at txucom.net. That's blind like me at txucom.net.
Contact information.
Blind Handyman listserv. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com.
Contact information.
Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind like me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your
contact information.
Thanks for listening to The Blind Handyman. If you have an idea for a topic or project you would like us to discuss, let us know at our address, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, back to the show with Don Patterson.
I wasn't going to stop him. I was going to let him keep talking. I was going to let him keep talking. Hope he didn't cuss real bad on the show, you know?
That's it.
They came back to you, Mr. Earphone Man.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Hi there.
We're doing a show here. You might be cognizant of that.
Well, you know, that guy that wrote the email, maybe we've had too many
Yeah, could be.
Too many cold ones.
You were going to tell us about this bad luck that had befallen you.
Well, the warden and I, Emmy and I, are building our dream house, and they're making great progress. And I think we've talked about it off and on the shows. If you're a regular listener, listen to the archives. And we picked out the piece of ground that we like is about 3 acres when we get it fenced. We like the direction. The house is going to face north, back south, so you're not getting the west sun. Down here, the west sun on the front of a house is a killer.
Man,
I know because I live in a house, and I swore I'd never do it again. So the direction was perfect. And what made this property so valuable to us in our plans is all along the west side, we had these beautiful 30, 40, and 45-foot pine trees. I mean, if they're just East Texas pine, they might not be beautiful up someplace else. And we were going to keep it as because there's also a state or like a farm-to-market road there, fairly traveled, not heavily traveled. But anyway, so we were keeping these trees as a sun barrier when the west sun was low in the sky and noise barrier.
Now they've decided to widen the road.
Well, no, they haven't cut... They haven't cleared or brushed or come and trimmed the trees for the wires in probably 15 years. And we had this great, even if you were standing in the rough where the trees weren't, you were in old sticker bushes or something chest high.
Uh-huh.
So you couldn't see the house from the road, although the house was only 75 feet in there. You couldn't see it. Well, the people, TXU owns the lines. And as it turns out, while they have an easement on the state highway where their telephone poles are, they own, as it turns out, an easement on each side, on any side of that telephone pole, which if our fence was put up, made them, anyway, to make a long story short, they came inside our property line 35 or 40 feet and cut everything in sight.
Whoa!
I had a 70-foot wide barrier there of trees, pine trees and roughage that was about 75 feet thick that you walked through to you got to what was going to be our yard, and now it's only 30 to 35 feet wide.
They cut out half.
Anything that didn't move was, I mean, grass, trees, limbs, everything. And it's just, and then they also bogged their big trucks down, so now I have these big, huge mud holes, which, while it's in their easement, it's my property. And it just really... It just really hurt. I mean, it'll grow back. Some, you know, they didn't really take out any trees. They cut the limbs off the trees to keep them. Well, which I know they have the right to do. You don't want the tree limbs in the way of the wires. But to cut out the underbrush that we were saving there, the 6 foot tall stuff that could interfere with nothing. And it's just like, honestly, it looks like a desert. They just, this big swath.
Did they take it all with them?
Yes, they cleaned it up and everything. But see, to make me think, no, for sure that they came in too far is down the highway from us. There were some people who had lived there already, existing home, that have a fence. And they went around their fence. They did not go inside their fence to accomplish the same depth that they did on ours, you know. And it just really, you know, if you knew what we were going for, it really butchered up the deal.
But there's nothing you can do about it.
If I can find out how big the easement, and then you figure that if they did violate the easement, go too far, then an attorney we talked to, one of M's relatives, said, you know, you would have to prove that they knowingly went in there.
Leave it alone.
Yeah, you know,
yeah,
so
that's
not worth it.
Leave it alone.
Yeah,
it's just, not worth it.
Just it'll grow back.
I know an attorney or two myself.
What
Let
did Red Sovine sing? It'll come back.
It'll come back. Well, it will.
It'll come back. So it was kind of disappointing because we saw them, I mean, like down the road from us a mile away. I mean, they have these orange truck. The name of the thing is... Encore, like O-N-C-O-R.
Encore.
And these big orange trucks, and we saw them clearing, but we had no idea that they were doing the whole thing. We just saw them clearing at one place where they were building a new house, and we thought, you know, they were just there.
For that house.
But, I mean, the next day, we were there, and in fact, another thing they did was damaged or destroyed or hid or buried our survey stake, which I could no longer find, which I was going to use to put my fence.
Uh-huh.
So it looks like I could at least make them come back and resurvey and put that.
Oh, you can probably make them do anything you want them to do.
But
making them is going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Even if you've got a... Where's that home coming from?
I don't know, but it's there, isn't it?
There is a little
home. It's really
a disappointment. The kids left the compressor on, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Must be.
That has to be what that is.
Yeah, it's running, yeah. I think.
The kids left the compressor on. We aired up a tire, and they didn't go turn the compressor off or anything. Anyway.
Speaking of compressors, you drained the water out of your compressor?
Well, the valve.
You were talking about that earlier.
My brother, bless his heart, for the second time, broke the valve off the bottom of it.
Oh, man.
I replaced the first one. I need to replace this one. I don't know. I'll replace it. Of course, he built my father-in-law's deck, so I'm there again. There's nothing I can say. They've all got, you know, Tatum Progeny, and I'm just married to Luann. Not much I can say, so I ain't saying nothing. I'll replace the valve on the compressor, John.
But anyway, we're still going to move out there. We're not going to sell it just because they cut down on it.
Nah, don't. That's
minor, grow back.
Minor stuff. Don't worry about it.
But it sure made it look different. I mean, you went out there and you just...
I bet.
I'm going, you know, is this the right place? Am I in the right place, you know?
Yeah, after it had been there all those years. Hell, they probably thought you wanted it cleared out anyway, so...
They won't be back, you know, for 15 years.
That's right.
They won't be back at all. I mean, it'll be a long time before they come back. And you'll be, is the telephone turned down, Houston?
The what? Yeah.
Telephone phone?
Yeah.
That's not the compressor. That worries me. Anyway, another little show gone. So are Don's trees.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Well, let's see. Next week on the Handyman Show, we're going to do Dale Campbell's Cooking in the Dark and Blind Handyman kind of combined. And try that a few times and kind of see how that works, where we can all talk to Dale and ask him questions and take advantage of his great, vast knowledge and the warmth of his personality and enjoy him on the Handyman Show.
Are we talking about the Dale Campbell that I'm familiar with?
It'll be fantastic.
That's great. That's wonderful.
It'll be great.
It will be. We're
going to
do that.
Blind, handy people have got to cook, too. So.
Handyman.
What it is, man?
Well, cooking is handyman stuff.
It is. It really is.
Handymaning in the dark. Anyway, we're going to do Dale next week as a cooking show on the Blind Handyman. And if you're listening on ACB Radio, and it's the 16th of or 17th of the month of February 2004, coming up is Linda Justice and Blind Like Me, and you'll enjoy her. She's a fascinating, really neat lady. And we'll see you next week. Thanks, Don Pat.
Yes, sir. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, Don Shaw.
Okay, Phil.
As always, thanks to you, Tom
Houston.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you next week. I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.